Well, we're on the ride, I guess. Did you think after the Minnesota game that Iowa would pretty much control its own destiny for a Big Ten championship appearance still?
Well, if by that do you mean did I think we would beat Illinois? Yes. beyond that, well,
I mean, all the other pieces had to fall in place too. I mean, Minnesota had to lose to Ohio State, Wisconsin. I guess they didn't have to beat Nebraska either outcome
yeah,
on that.
That could have gone either way.
Would have still done it. But I don't know. Do you feel good about Iowa's position?
Well, it's. I mean, after the Minnesota game, this is the best possible position we could be in, right?
That is true.
Although, and I know that you very correctly, and I agreed with you 2 weeks ago, observed that, you know, you were more concerned about the Nebraska game than the Wisconsin game. I've kind of flipped that over now.
Oh, really? Have you? What could possibly have changed your mind?
I have 408 reasons to change my mind. Welcome to 12 Saturdays podcast. I'm James Bladel.
I'm Tori Brecht.
And it's going to be really tempting, I think, in this show to talk about the upcoming game. So we should, like, be disciplined, you know, eat our vegetables and talk about Illinois.
Nobody wants to talk about Illinois. Illinois fans don't want to talk about Illinois.
This is true.
But I guess we can talk about them in context of what it all means. Not a strong team, clearly. A team that gave Wisconsin some trouble, though.
Really?
That close-ish game in Madison, even. Illinois, I watched some of that game. And, you know, Wisconsin's had these slow starts in a lot of the games, including the Nebraska game, which they trailed in.
Yeah, they were down by 17 at one point, right?
Was it 17 or 17-3? They were behind the eight ball, and then, you know, just reeled off some insane amount of straight points and ran roughshod over them. So, see, now you got us talking about the upcoming game again. Look at you, did it.
I know. Well, and one thing I could say about the Illinois game it was 30-14, but it felt like it wasn't that close. I mean, we left at least 10 points on the field with that shanked field goal bounced off the upright and then that Mark Wiseman unable to punch it in from the 1 yard line.
Yeah, I wanted a quarterback sneak on that play, just for the record book. And if you were here, so you know I called it before, so I'm not in hindsight 20, you know.
No, you did call it, and you were saying it at the time when they were lining up that, you know, if you bounce Wiseman outside, what are you thinking? And to my credit, I called the safety. I was just off by about 5 minutes.
You called the safety, and you called the long touchdown pass from Beathard too. You were on fire on your.
Oh yeah, yeah. Place. That's well, but you could tell CJ wanted to uncork that one.
Well, yeah, but the guy still had to execute, in the words of our bold leader. No, I mean, I enjoyed the game. You know, I was originally planning on going down there, but the cold forecast and the disappointment of the week before kind of and the prospect of I went to the basketball game the night before and didn't get back till 11:30, and an 11 a.m. start, I didn't really feel like trying to, you know, pack all of that into a 12-hour window there. So I'm not too disappointed, I guess, although I haven't been to a game in Champaign since 1990. So,
but, you know, we would have won that game in Minnesota, then we would have found a way to make that work.
Oh,
right?
For sure. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For sure. So
yeah, let's not blame the weather.
No,
because I was right there with you.
But and I think we talked about this with our guest last week, Tom, who's also from the Quad Cities, is that the Illinois game actually has a little bit of oomph for those of us Iowa fans here in the Quad Cities.
Yeah.
And it felt good. It always feels good to beat those guys.
Yeah, it does. You know, and maybe we even put the exclamation point on their coach's career, at least in the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's possible. Although, you know, they've won a few games, and they actually have two winnable games left on their schedule, Northwestern and Purdue, I think. So,
I don't see those as winnable for Illinois.
Well, they're winnable. I'm not saying they're going to win.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
They're winnable in the same way that Iowa against Wisconsin is winnable for Iowa. Is it super likely? No. Yeah, but is it out of the realm of possibility? No.
Well, I think, if anything, this whole season has been indicative of nothing is outside the realm of possibility. I mean, you were texting me like, hey, put on the Northwestern Notre Dame game.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously Iowa's game is, or Iowa's season has really been up and down too. But, and then the other thing I was thinking about is, you know, we've been talking about this, you know, the quadrangle of hate and the four-way battle for the West Division. And so far, the first two games in that, much anticipated, have been clunkers. I mean, Minnesota beat the living crap out of Iowa in a, you know, non-competitive game. And then Wisconsin beat the crap out of Nebraska in a non-competitive game. So, you know, it's a little bit of a shocker to me because really on paper, these teams seem like they should be pretty even. But and that's why I'm hoping that maybe these are more anomalies, you know, that you know, the things start to snowball and get out of control. I don't know that it's that indicative of that wide of a gap between the talent level of the teams. What do you think?
I think you're right. And I was just reflecting on this today, was that that Iowa's now had three blowouts in a row. We've been on the wrong side of one of them and the right side of two of them. And how strange that is, all the previous seasons, you know, the last few seasons, and even earlier this season, as we were complaining that, you know, oh, Ferentz always keeps you close, whether you're playing, you know, Michigan State or Iowa State, you know, and in this case, no, I mean, these last three games have been blowouts, and it's been kind of prevalent, not just in our league, but you know, around the league. I mean, look at Notre Dame's getting handled out in Arizona State, and we saw some craziness in the SEC as well as the Big 12. So I don't know what's going on. It's weird. It's like if a team jumps out a little on top of another team, it seems like they just kind of hang it up.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a big credit to Iowa too that they did bounce back the way they did. You know, I thought it was interesting in Coach Ferentz's press conference this week. He said, you know, the best lesson in sports, no matter, you know, whether you have swagger, whether you're on a roll, whatever, is how you respond after you get knocked down, because everybody's yeah. always going to get knocked down at some point. And, you know, to their credit, Iowa, you know, bounced back and, you know, got serious. Now, you know, some would argue you shouldn't ever let yourself get to that point, but, you know, it does happen to almost everybody.
Almost everybody. So, yeah, so what did you see, anything, any standout thing? I mean, it's kind of a weird game. You know, Weissman goes over 100 yards but doesn't get a touchdown.
Yeah, you know, I think to me the biggest two biggest improvements were the offensive line seemed to control the line of scrimmage much better than they did against Minnesota, and the defense, I thought, really seemed to tackle better. You know, I thought there was some just horrible, pathetic tackling in the Minnesota game. And that's going to be huge in the next two games coming up because, you know, we're playing two running backs that you better be damn sure that you are playing your right assignment and that you wrap up and tackle with your arms. I mean, we were laughing, if you remember, watching the Nebraska-Wisconsin game, that these Nebraska guys were like launching themselves at Melvin Gordon without their hands. And it's like, what are you thinking, dude? He's just going to blow right past you.
Yeah. And where did Gordon make his bread and butter? I mean, he had some solid runs up the middle, but his really long runs, and I think a couple of his scoring runs, were on the edge, getting to the corner and turning the corner. And where has Iowa been vulnerable this year in the run game?
Yeah,
that edge and keeping contained. So that's what's got me a little nervous. And now we're talking about Wisconsin again.
Well, we gave Illinois quite a bit of chatter.
Well, we should at least toast them. We should say, you know, they did what they had to do, right?
They did.
They looked good, but it was Illinois. Maybe we should just toast them because then get to the thing we really want to talk about.
To the meat. The Badger meat.
The Badger meat. All right. So we'll toast. What are you drinking tonight?
I am actually drinking one of those Omagong Abbey Duvel ales that you brought over, and it's quite delicious on a cold, cold night.
Those are good. I was, I am actually drinking the last of the Goose Island, Illinois. Yeah, maybe in honor of the vanquished Illini, but it's a little strong. After this, I'm probably going to have some NyQuil or something because I'm still fighting a bit of a cold.
Brandy always works.
All right. We'll toast this one and then we'll pivot to Wisconsin. Well, it's hard to ignore, and I think even Ferentz mentioned this in his press conference, it's hard to ignore what you've got coming into Kinnick on Saturday. I mean, the guy is particularly, you know, what Gordon did against Nebraska just made headlines across the college football world, set records. Someone pointed out that Tavian Banks currently holds the record for rushing yards in Kinnick.
And 300 and something?
Yeah, or was it, who was it that has the opponents, the visitors rushing?
It wouldn't surprise me if it's Dane.
Yeah, it's a little less than that, though. It's 300 and, you know, it's about maybe, you know, 10, 15 yards shy of what Tavian has. So what do you think?
I mean, 100 yards less than what he got against Nebraska.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I'm thinking, like, and maybe I'm just a crazy optimist here, but I'm like, you know, you hold Melvin Gordon to 175 yards and two touchdowns, you got a shot.
True. So, you know, the Wisconsin game is always a personal one for me because, you know, I grew up in Madison and I have a lot of friends and family and folks up in that area. And, you know, and then to kind of rub salt in the wound, my daughter just returned this afternoon from her college visit to Wisconsin. And she had tweeted out hashtag Go Badgers. She really enjoyed it. So I'm trying to process all that right now.
I think there are you know, family counseling services that can help you when your child goes astray, when your teen starts getting involved in the wrong crowd and dabbling in things like Badger football.
You know, two things. One, she's not a huge sports fan. And then two, it really is a great academic school. And so, you know, in my battle of lessers of evils, at least it's not Illinois or Iowa State, right? So,
well, that's true.
You know, they're kind of like our, you know, drunk cheese-fed cousins to the north. So I can live with that. But yeah, well, the game, you know, it's daunting, but I'm telling you, so far this year, I've been pretty close on most of these, but I'm starting to get this weird, good feeling about it. And I'll tell you why. It's not for any really rational reason. It just, to me, it feels like Iowa is due for one of those kind of big upset games. And, you know, and I wrote about this in my column this week, Wisconsin has been the opponent in a few of those, you know, the Barry Alvarez last game that I think Iowa was like 5-4 or 5-4 and 5 or something like that. And Wisconsin was, I think, 8-1 or 8-2. And they went up and beat them in Madison. And then, of course, you and I were there for the awesome 2004 game. I don't think that one was as huge of an upset because Wisconsin, if you recall, had just gotten pounded the week before by Michigan State. But I still think they were the favorite.
But that was their first loss, and we were, you know,
correct.
I mean...
Correct. And we ended up clinching the Big Ten in that one. And I don't know. It's just like karmically, you know, after the 2010 game, which kind of started our whole downward spiral, it feels like the football gods owe us one here. And I know that's a stupid thing to put your hopes into, but that's where I am.
I'm with you there. And I also think of, like, what do they have? Take Melvin Gordon off the table. Now, it's impossible to do. He's so good. And that offensive line is so good. But let's just set that aside for a second, okay? What else have they got? Stavi's not going to beat you. Of course, I said that about Mitch Leiter.
No, well, here's the thing, though, is that up until the Minnesota game debacle for Iowa and the Wisconsin dismantling of Nebraska, the Wisconsin and Iowa kind of seemed to be on a parallel course. Both had, escaped some games that probably shouldn't have been close as they should have been. You know, I think they only beat South Florida by 10 and trailed well into the third or fourth quarter in that game. As I mentioned, they struggled a little bit with Illinois. Both teams had an inexplicable loss to a team that wasn't very good. We lost to Iowa State. They lost to Northwestern. You saw how badly Iowa just dismantled Northwestern. And, you know, so I think perception is that they're this unstoppable juggernaut. But I mean,
they don't have that stinking loss, though. They don't have that stinking blowout loss, though, like we did with Minnesota.
Exactly. That's the blowout loss yet. The big difference is we were on the bad end of a blowout loss. They were on the winning end of one. And I think that's why that perception that the teams are eons apart is there right now.
So maybe that's what we owe them on Saturday. So we'll even it out.
What I'm pinning my hopes on is that both of those games, to an extent, were an anomaly. I mean, Melvin Gordon's not going to get 400
Careful now.
Two times in a row. I mean, has anybody in sport, any sport, I'm not even talking college football, I'm talking about sport, ever set two individual records of that magnitude 2 weeks in a row?
No, I can't imagine it. No. Well, and if you remember, I mean, who's been our best running back of the last, what, 5+ years? Sean Green, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, and so he had kind of a crap game against Illinois and then turns around and he lit it up and against Wisconsin. So I think running backs are hot and cold or can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you got your workhorse guys, but I think that, you know, in some case. But now I want to be hopeful. I want to be optimistic. But we're going to have to break so many conventions to pull off a win on Saturday, right? We're going to have to beat a ranked team. We're going to have to beat a team with a winning record. We're going to have to stop a power rush offense with a marquee running back that likes to get to the edge. You know, we're going to have to do all of this with a potential West championship on the line. You know, something's got to give, right, if we're going to win. Because all of those things are things that this team just hasn't been able to do this year.
Well, and not only is this something this team has not been able to do this year, I think this has been sort of the heart of the argument about, you know, Ferentz maybe being a little past his prime for the last several years. You know, I even when last week when we were talking to Tom was lamenting that, you know, it's been a long time since we've really had that big moment, that marquee, awesome feeling in football. You know, beating Nebraska on the last day of the year last year was great, you know, getting to a decent bowl. But it's been, you know, really since the meltdown in 2010, since Iowa was a player and had an impact either at the very top of the Big Ten Conference and certainly nationally. And, you know, that opportunity is there now. I mean, granted, Iowa's going to be, if they win, they'll be a spoiler. It's not like anybody's going to suddenly put them in the top 15 or something like that. But, you know, it's going to be a big story, you know, and it feels like we're due for that. And that may not mean anything, but, you know, I think it means something in the Iowa football offices. And I think it means something to the players that came to Iowa because they wanted to be in these kinds of games and in these kinds of situations. Is that going to be enough? Not necessarily, but I tell you what, I'm glad it's at Kinnick with all this going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that was the other thing I was thinking about is, would this be, if they were somehow able to pull this off, would this be the biggest game in Kinnick since Penn State 08?
Yeah, I don't know. Some of those games in 09 were pretty huge too.
Well, yeah, which, you know. I mean, we lost the big ones, Wisconsin and Ohio State. So
that was 2010.
Right. So it would have been,
I mean, I think we beat Michigan there, didn't we? I know we beat Wisconsin at Wisconsin in 2009 because I was there.
Yeah.
But no, it's been like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, but those weren't, in 09, those weren't really upsets, though. We were undefeated. We were ranked, you know.
True.
They were coming in.
I think this would be the biggest upset since we took out number one Penn State in 08, for sure.
So, yeah.
Which is in my top three, probably Kinnick memories, I think, and you were gone.
And I was was gone. I know. I missed them all. But no, someone was posting that, posted a link to that 2004 Wisconsin game. That was actually one of my favorite games at Kinnick. But I think, you know, it's that one. It's 03 against Michigan. It's, you know, there's a couple in there that were pretty amazing. But this one would be up there, just if nothing else, just because of the delta between these two teams.
Well, here's something to hang your hopes on a little bit. You know, we've mentioned that Wisconsin has gotten off to slow starts, including against Nebraska. And I think that if you look at their scores, it's reflective in the relatively closer scores when they're playing away games. So, you know, if Iowa can get off to a hot start, Wisconsin gets off to their traditional slow start, all of a sudden now you've got that Kinnick magic, that crowd going, the craziness, all of that. You know, I that's what I think Iowa has to kind of pin their hopes on. They have to do to Wisconsin, and I'm not saying by the same score, I think, because Wisconsin's a really good team, but they need to, this game needs to be at that emotional pitch that Minnesota had against Iowa.
Right, and yeah, exactly right. We've got to get the snowball rolling downhill in the wrong, you know, in the right direction for us.
And so, against a quality team like Wisconsin, you're not going to end up beating them 50-14 or whatever. That's not going to happen.
No.
But I think that can help propel you to making the upset.
Well, if you can get them behind, you know, get them behind on a score, you know, even if you can get them behind two scores, then they might have to start taking chances a little bit and get out of their rhythm, and they're not able to just run Melvin Gordon down your throat all day.
Well, you know, and an interesting thing, back to what you said right at the very beginning, Jim, is, you know, let's look at the two teams, and that there's no question that Melvin Gordon will be far and away the best player out on the field, okay? But after that, when you start comparing the teams, you know, I don't think the overall talent disparity is that big between these two teams, and I'll guarantee you this. Wisconsin would take either of Iowa's quarterbacks as their starting quarterback in a heartbeat.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we would take any one of their linebackers.
Right. But here's the thing. I think they would maybe take a couple of our defensive linemen. And I think the offensive lines are kind of a wash. Our receivers are actually better than theirs, which is
definitely.
How often do we get to say that? So,
well,
you know, if this
that
was
and our tight ends.
If this was an NFL game, I think Iowa's the favorite team, because in an NFL game, you look at the who's at QB and who's at wide receiver, and then if the offensive lines are kind of a wash, you go with the hot quarterback. So,
well, especially in fantasy,
unfortunately, it's college, and running actually still works really well, especially you know, if you got a guy that might just run for 300-400 yards. You know, that's that tends to be helpful.
That's what I'm saying. You're not gonna shut him down. You just need to make sure that, you know, your five or six skill players and your offensive line can beat that one guy.
Right.
Because that's what it's going to come down to. And
in retrospect, and this will be what I'm really, really curious to see. So you want to talk about the craziest stat of the college football season. Western Illinois, our little neighbor, friend down to the southwest here, much worse than you and I, much worse than Ball State. I mean, just a really horrible. I mean, they can't even compete in the MVC. Held Melvin Gordon to 38 yards rushing. Now, they lost, I think, like 34-7, or I don't even remember what the score was. And because Stave ended up being like 22-28 for like 250 yards. Because they literally basically just crammed nine people in the box and said, you know, beat us. Beat us with your arm if you can. I don't know, with Iowa having pretty good cornerbacks, I don't know if that's not that might not be a bad strategy.
I say, it might not be the worst idea to say, look, you know, King and Maben, you guys are on your own, because the safeties and the linebackers are completely focused on Gordon, and the line is going to disrupt just about every pass play they can. And maybe that's, you know, if you sell out like that.
Now, what I wonder, though, is that so doesn't sound like Ferentz, though, you know, in his kind of football belief system. You know, you and I have joked about his like little book of how football is supposed to be played. You know,
it's not a book. It's like a little Excel spreadsheet that he keeps on a I would say keep it on a tablet. But, he, you know, Ferentz, he probably prints it out.
He's got it on his Newton with the pen. the little stylus, he writes it out there. But yeah, you know, but he's not the one to try gimmicks or anything. You know, I think he's usually a big believer in big boy football lineup and do what you do. But I don't know, man. And the other thing that struck me is it.
Well, but okay, but if he's smart, doesn't he know that if you're playing big boy football and the other guys are bigger boys?
Yeah, I don't know.
That you got to come up with something else.
I hope
right?
so. But the fascinating thing to me too, and I don't know if you caught this, but did you see where Ferentz actually used the B word in his press conference this week?
He used the B word.
He referred to this as a big game. Huh, he doesn't usually do that, and so I thought that was kind of an interesting. Peek into the psyche of the football program right now.
Well, let's hope so, and let's hope that and you know, there's some a couple other things going on aside from you know, aside from this particular game, which is, I mean, of course, looming large. But I mean, we got the note today that Derek Willis, how do you pronounce his last name?
I think it's Willis.
Willis. Is going to be rejoining the team, or at least he's seeking to rejoin the team. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, is it just kind of a, hey, you know, kid's going through a lot and, you know, got a lot on his plate and you just kind of all is forgiven? Or do you think he's got a, what, where do you think, how do you think Ferentz reacts? Because obviously today he acted like he played coy. Oh, really? I don't follow the message boards. I didn't know this was going on.
You know what? I actually, you know, and I actually think that, Ferentz was blindsided by that. I think because from my understanding, the way it all kind of came about is that the rumors are out there floating. And then some of the Iowa media, I think specifically online media, contacted him and Willie's, and Willie's basically said, yeah, I'm planning on returning and my dad's been here. And so then that was like right before the press conference and they brought it up. So I actually think that Ferentz was a little blindsided by it. And yeah. I think he, wisely, you know, in a high profile person in that kind of a situation, the worst mistake you can make is to commit and say something before you know all the facts and you've had a chance to digest and assess the situation. So yeah. I think his reaction of saying, you know, this is where it was, you know, this is what I know right now, I'm concentrating on Wisconsin, blah, 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 I think was absolutely the right play at the time. Longer term, you know, it's tough when a guy quits on his team, no matter if it's a great reason or not. And it was, but you know, there's still support systems in place and he chose, you know, personally to forego that and do this. So, you know, I think that if he does come back, it's going to take a little bit of, you know, and he even said, I guess, you know, he wants to work his way back onto the team. I think he's going to have to.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm on board with that. I think that you've got to give the kid a path to get back in the good graces. Not necessarily of the coach, because I think that Ferentz, when this all went down a few weeks ago, Ferentz was actually, you know, he wasn't really definitive in his statements. He was saying things like, we hope it works out, we hope we're able to, you know, hang on to him, or something like that. He didn't close the door then, and so if he wants to come back through the door now, you kind of have to give him that path and say, you know, okay, well, you've got to do this to get back in the good graces of the coach, but here's what you're going to have to do to get back, you know, and earn the confidence and loyalty of your teammates. But, you know, you step back from this and you say, here's a guy, he's 18, 19 years old. He's got obviously a very stressful family situation he's wrestling with. Football was probably, you know, not even in the top 10 of the things that were concerning him at the time. And so, you know, if you're going to punish him for anything, punish him for going to the press first before talking to Ferentz, or, you know, or social media or whatever. But not because of what he did, but just kind of maybe the way he handled it. And, you know, have him pick up trash in Kinnick Stadium the next 2 weeks and move on.
Yeah, you know, I'd be surprised if there wasn't a path back, just from the standpoint that it seems that, you know, if it's a situation that it doesn't involve, you know, illegal behavior, drugs, some kind of
crashing,
you know,
a moped,
ill repute, you know, you basically get another opportunity. You know, it may not be on your timetable. But you know, it would be the only big unknown, I guess, Jim, is what transpired between when the rumor that he was leaving first came out, coach saying the door was open, stuff happened we don't know anything about, and then coach said door is closed. So
did he say that?
He did. Eventually he did.
Okay, I may have missed.
And
that.
So, you know, none of us know, you know, what was said by whom and what was offered and what was rejected, et cetera, et cetera. So that I suppose could play some role in it, but it would be surprising to me that if there's not a path back. And I'll tell you what, I mean, as it speaks, the guy would be probably our best receiving recruit next class.
That was what I was going to say. It really helps his case that the pipeline is not exactly overflowing with receivers in that class. I think that next year, you're looking ahead to 2015, it's him and Tevon Smith and what, Vandenberg?
What
happened to Hillier this year?
Where
did he go?
You know, it's just, it's been an odd year from the standpoint that there's not a really many standout players. There's a lot of good players, but it's like, you know, a guy shines in a game and then you don't see him for 3 weeks and then he shines in a game. I mean, look at Powell last week having a couple big plays and we're like, oh, that guy's still on the team. Yeah, that's right. I mean, you just don't know. You know, Wadley suddenly has that amazing game out of nowhere and hasn't really done that again. So, I mean, there's not been, you know, not only has the team as a whole been inconsistent, but all the individuals on the team haven't shined in any kind of consistency either, which frankly is probably part of the reason why Iowa's been so up and down. Who do you count on week in and week out?
Yeah, well, last week it was the tight end's opportunity to shine, and between Doozy and Hamilton. It's been a weird one, so... But I hope he gets back, and you know, he's sort of a local kid, right?
His last year he spent here in Rock Island. So, Quad City kids just don't have that great of a track record of being able to stick it out and be there at Iowa either. So I'd like to see that change just from a selfish standpoint.
Was it Marquez Simmons was maybe one of the last ones?
Well, I mean, outside of some of the best Bentendorf kids, you know, Sandeman, Anger, Banks, I mean,
or Julian
Vandeveld.
Vandeveld.
Yeah, absolutely. So I shouldn't use that blanket statement. I guess we've had some high profile ones that get there or made it. But we're hyper critical of that by being close to it, I guess.
So. Well, I had a tough time there, and I'm from the Quad Cities. So I wasn't playing football. It was just the academics kicked my ass.
So. Well, you did go to North.
I was completely ill prepared for. For an actual school.
That's true.
Yeah. But anyway, well, no, it would be good to get him back. So looking ahead, you know, we got two games left, regular season. There's going to be a bowl game. Don't know where or what, and certainly it could vary significantly depending on the outcome of these next two games. I think right now you drop them both, you're in. What, you're in the San Francisco Bowl?
If that, if even that. It might be hard in Dallas.
Maybe Dallas.
So.
You split them and you go where? Holiday?
You know, I don't really know the bowl tie-ins as well as I used to. So.
Well, they're not as definite as they used to. And my understanding is if the Big Ten is left out of the field of four, then everybody drops down a notch, right?
Correct. Which would probably be best for our national reputation because we usually play up. But here was an interesting question, and this was posed as a poll on Hawkeye Report today. I don't know if you had a chance to see it or not, but the poll question is, you know, what your level of satisfaction would be with various outcomes. That is 7-5, 8-4, 9-3. What's minimum acceptable, what's not. And the way it was posed was really kind of interesting. Like I think the first choice was even 9-3 is totally unacceptable because of the loss to Iowa State and the blowout to Minnesota. We should be better and we need change. The next one is, you know, 9-3 and being in the heart of the West Division race redeemed that. And I'm satisfied with the season. And then 8-4, and then of course 7-5. I didn't expect much better from this team anyway, so I'm satisfied. So where do you fall in that spectrum?
It's a good. I didn't see that poll, so I'll answer it here, and then I'll go fill out my response online. So, after the Iowa State, Ball State, Iowa State, those that sequence of games, I called it for 7-5. I didn't want it to be 7-5, but then I bet you the case of beer. Now that said, I would love to buy you that beer. I would love nothing more. It would be I would be getting off cheap if all I had to do was buy you that beer, and it gets us to 8 or 9 wins. But I do have to step back and say that if we do split, even split these two games, we go 1-1 against Nebraska and Wisconsin, that Iowa State game looms large. And it's just another another example of that albatross around Ferentz's neck, is that you've got to beat your non-conference, you've got to beat the MAC schools, you've got to beat Iowa State every year to kind of rise above the minimum baseline of expectations that folks have. Now, you put that together with the fact that this is a veteran team, the schedule lined up about as well as you could have, you know, drawn it up on paper. It's basically a birthday wish of a schedule. And we really haven't been hit by the injury bug too bad this year. I say that, you know, I'm knocking on wood over here, but, you know, we really haven't had any one position or any of our preseason stars go down with huge injuries. So, you know, so 8-4 would be a little disappointing for me. Although I'll take it at this point. Right. I'd take 9-3, but both of those I would see as a step back because of the Iowa State issue, because of the way that we were returning all those folks from last year's squad, and because of the way the schedule set up.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty close to your way of thinking. I think, you know, of course, preseason, I predicted 9-3, and that's it would be a monumental accomplishment at this point. And 9-3, I'd actually be a little bit, I think I could even forgive the Iowa State loss, even though, man, at home, like you said, we should always beat Iowa State. I wouldn't say always. I would say, but we should always beat them at Kinnick. And occasionally,
well, we would be playing for 9-3.
Occasionally,
if
they get an upset, right? So, yeah. So that's where I stand on that issue. But I would say overall, I would take 8-4 as acceptable, and acceptable from the fact that, you know, the bottom out was 2012 at 4-8, got back to 8-4, got to a nice bowl last year. I would feel like 8-4 again this year is a little bit of treading water, but at least it's not a step back. 7-5, definitely a step back. 8-4, acceptable, if not thrilling.
Like plateau,
kind of a, well, I wouldn't say a plateau as much as a pause, hopefully, you know, kind of a, okay, we're not a bottom feeder and we're above average, but we still have a lot of work and some things to evaluate to get back to competing for Big Ten championships. And as you know, that's my bottom line, is not necessarily, you know, right, always winning the Big Ten championship, but to be in it. And, you know, we are in it this year. Now, some of that obviously is a function of our schedule. We haven't beat a winning team yet, and I'm not blind to that fact, you know, but, you know, all I really ask is be there in when the weather gets cold and be fighting to try to win the Big Ten. And we're there. Lose these two, and that was just fool's gold. Okay. Win one of them, especially with the Wisconsin game, and you're right there in the thick of it, and I'm going to feel pretty good about this season, if not great.
So I guess, you know, the other thing that concerns me is that, and I've mentioned this to you before, is I am very much a the stars have to align for Iowa. I don't believe that Iowa is one of those year-in, year-out contenders. And it feels like this is the year when the stars have lined up. Next year, we lose both. We had a lot of attrition on the, you know, on the offensive and defensive lines. We keep a lot of the skill players, but we lose, you know, we lose our bell cow running back and offensive and defensive line. And so, you know, it feels like next year the expectation is going to be lower and the schedule is going to be a lot tougher. So it feels like if you're going to make hay, this is the year to do it. And that's why, you know, even splitting these games and coming out 8-4, but with that loss to Iowa State separating you from that in 9-3, that, you know, that's why I would consider 8-4 a disappointment.
You know, I don't disagree with you, but I do think people tend to overplay schedules in general. I mean, if you remember,
yeah,
2009 was supposed to be a really tough year, kind of a rebuilding year, and we had that really tough schedule. And then, you know, Iowa was undefeated and ranked in the top 10 up until Ricky Stanzi got taken out with a cheap shot by Northwestern in the end zone.
Pat Fitzgerald.
And we still ended up playing for a Big Ten championship and almost winning it in by getting into overtime in Columbus. And then everybody, 2010, oh my God, now the schedule's great. We get Wisconsin at home. We get Ohio State at home. All right, the stars are lined up. We've got all these players back, and the balloon fades. So, yeah, this year the schedule looks good, but, you know, I think you don't really know until you're actually in the season. So, you know, I mean, there's no doubt that this has been a soft schedule this year, but I don't know. Maybe Iowa's not as good as we thought. You know, I like Mark Weissman a lot, but I have to tell you, I'm kind of excited about seeing a different style of running back week in and week out starting next year as well. So,
does Kanziri graduate?
I don't think so.
Okay, so
he's back.
So next year,
Wadley's back, and we've got a couple guys redshirting that look good. We got that Karen Higdon kid that's coming in that looks really good. So
we would lose. I'm drawing a good. Well, Bullock graduates though.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'd lose Hamilton on the tight end. So, you know, I'm with you. I mean, it just, you know, it's just one of those things where I like to think of this is coming in cycles, 3-4 year cycles, and it just feels like we should be at the crest. And so 8-4 is kind of a low mark for a crest.
I guess so, but I mean, I'll try not to be too critical of you, but I mean, it was only, you know, 2 years ago that we were 4-8. So, you know, that's a pretty freaking deep hole you dug yourself into. I mean, I think maybe we were maybe ahead of schedule a little bit to get to 8-4 last year. Maybe this is right where we're supposed to be. You know, maybe
last year should have been 6-6.
Yeah, 6-6, 7-5. This year maybe is an 8-4 kind of year with where we were, where we came from. I don't know. Does that make sense?
It does, but then that also basically resigns us to the idea that it's 2016, 2017 is when we'll be contending again, right? Unless you get ahead of schedule again.
Well, but that was according to sort of, as you said, the peaks and valley thing. If the valley, if we were at the bottom of the valley in 2012, it would be, you know, 15, you know, 16 when you should be hitting the peak again, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't know if we will be, but no. I mean, using that as a theory, that would be
great. You know, and the good news is that, you know, some folks are getting some experience. So they got this one, and we've got Nebraska. So who do you think? Let's talk about coaches,
though. Let me go back one time, though. Okay, I will say this. When I say about 8-4 feeling satisfying, to me it would be, and not just for personal reasons, but partially for personal reasons, 8-4 with the eighth win coming against Wisconsin, but then losing a heartbreaker against Nebraska would feel better to me than 8-4 where we, you know, let Melvin Gordon run roughshod. We're totally out of the championship race, but we happen to somehow beat a beleaguered Nebraska team that's spirit is broken and on their way to, you know what I mean?
Well,
wouldn't that feel different?
It does feel different, and I'm trying to figure out if that's because we live on the eastern side of the state or the western side of the state. Because if you talk to Bill or some of our friends that, you know, are from western Iowa, I think they might have that reverse. It's like, you know, go ahead. It's Melvin Gordon's year. He's going to New York City. He's going to sit there whenever they, you know, he may not win the Heisman, but he's going to be in the front row. Let him run all over you, and no one will bat an eye and say, yep, that's Melvin Gordon. That's what he does. And then go and beat Nebraska. You know,
yeah, I can see that. But in terms of Iowa getting a little attention and getting people to pay attention to our football program again, I think it's got to go the opposite way.
It would be nice to have 7 days of people talking about us. Correct.
It's been a
while.
Might
even get ranked.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So I read something interesting because Florida dismissed their coach. Another one of these in-season firings. Man, that's just... I'm not sure I agree with that, Tori. And you know me, I'm not exactly, I view coaches as employees, of, you know, or CEOs of billion-dollar businesses, but, you know, I'm not on board with the firing somebody mid-season.
Well, you know, and I know I've been harping on this, and I know it's not a popular sentiment among quite a few people, but, you know, when you start looking at what's happening in Michigan, you look at what's happening in Florida, man, that really, to me, is just kind of that warning sign of, you know, you got to kind of be careful when you start thinking about regime change, just because, you know, it can really set you back. You know, if you don't make the right hire and then you get a guy, and then when do you get rid of him, and do you get rid of him in the middle of a bad season, then what happens with recruiting and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, I really think the best outcome for Iowa is that we somehow get to a place where, you know, there's a natural stopping point for Ferentz. You know, but I mean,
well, but Arthur, there, that there
happened
ability.
With Tom Davis too, and that still turned into a shit show. So, you know, well, I don't know.
I think the two mistakes you make when you talk about coaching change is, you know, like you said, you make a bad hire, you get rid of somebody, and it's a bad and public breakup. You know, sometimes in the midseason, and then you make a bad hire as a successor. I think the other fallacy that folks get into is they hang on to a below average coach too long, and let him kind of diminish the, you know, the prestige associated with that particular job. By either diminishing ticket sales or diminishing revenue or just kind of, you know, just kind of gradually letting the air out of the balloon. So, you know, I see it both ways. You can't be afraid to make a change when you need to. But where I was going with this whole thing, and the reason I brought it up, is because someone, I think it was on Twitter or something today, said with Florida's making this coaching change now, all of the hot seats are in the Big Ten. You agree with that?
You know, I guess I haven't really been paying attention to what other teams have been really struggling on the national scene.
Well, let's run through what we've got here. We've got, you know, I mean, are we basically saying Brady Hoke and Tim Beckman, they're gone?
Well, and what about Wilson down at Indiana? I mean, they're not going to win a Big Ten game this year, potentially, although they've had some injury issues. You know, I think is another one. And then, you know, the fascinating
Pelini.
Well, that was the one I was going to bring up. And boy, in a way, being a Nebraska fan's got to be even the worst, because, you know, the guy puts up 9 wins and he does a lot of what you say you want a coach to do. He beats the teams he's supposed to beat. You know, rarely
but
do
he
they
loses
get upset.
The big games.
And not only does he lose the big games, but he gets like absolutely ass kicked and embarrassed. Now, granted, that happened to Iowa this year, but I mean, how many, you could count on one hand the amount of times that's happened in the entire Ferentz tenure. And it's an annual or sometimes biannual occurrence over in Lincoln. And I mean, they posed the question with 90% or 80% or whatever it is percent of the fan base wanting him gone. What happens if they actually win their last two games? I mean, you can't fire a 10-2 coach no matter what happens, can you?
You know, that's a good question. I still chuckle because when you talk about just getting blown out, what year was it when I had to go somewhere? It might have been 2012, Tori. I had to go somewhere and I was on one of these transatlantic flights and I took off just as they were kicking off the Big Ten championship between Nebraska and Wisconsin, I think. And I, you know, of course, fly for 6, 7, 8 hours, whatever, and land and find out that they lost by like 60 points or something like that. You're right. It's every single year. It's not just blowing the big game. It's just getting completely blown off the field and embarrassed. And, you know, I'm starting to think Pelini is Italian for, you know, can't get to that 10th win, because it seems to be this barrier for him.
Well, yeah. And I mean, that's got to be some kind of a fresh hell for a Nebraska fan, you know, that just, you know, he's almost, I mean, he dared them to fire him last year and the AD
blinked.
We thought
he was gone.
Everybody thought he was gone. I mean, he basically dared them. Go ahead, fire me if you want. The AD blinked and now, you know, he's like this yoke around their neck. I tell you what, it makes our foibles and torch wielding about Ferentz seem quaint. It really does.
Yeah. What about Hazel at Purdue? You think he's safe?
You know, I think they made enough progress this year in going from completely uncompetitive last year to somewhat competitive this year, being in some games, winning a game or two, that I think he at least bought himself another year, because they kind of had that, you know, year 2000 under Ferentz feel to them.
And I think Pat Fitzgerald saved his job last week with that overtime win over Notre Dame.
Well, I think Northwestern job is kind of similar in some ways to the Iowa State job, in that, you know, if you get a couple of those big time wins that excite your fan base each season, you know, like apparently in Iowa State, it only takes beating Iowa. You know, I think you basically can, you know, write yourself another year or two.
Okay, well, I guess that's enough about that. Before we go, I wanted to get your thoughts on one other thing. Did you see the announcement about Des Moines getting some of the first and second round of the 2016 NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I did see that. I think it's great. I think it's going to be good for the state. You know, it'd be nice if we actually had an opportunity to maybe play a game there.
Now, Iowa State can't play, right, because they're technically the host?
That is true.
But we could go. You and I could go. Drake, could Drake go?
That's a good question. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. And you know, Des Moines probably a good mid-sized venue for that sort of event.
Yeah, I think the what was holding them back before is before Wells Fargo, I don't think they had an arena that had quite enough seats for it. I think it's got to be at least 15,000 or so.
Yeah, and then maybe airport or, you know, just different ways to get in, and hotels are probably, that's probably a factor as well. But anyway, that'll be interesting, and we'll have to keep an eye on that, and hopefully Fran will continue to have the men's basketball team trending in the right direction, so we'll be able to just kind of bank on those first and second round appearances and wins in the years to come.
Yeah, frankly, you know, it'd be fun to go even if Iowa wasn't playing in there. That's one of my favorite sporting events of the year is the opening round, although it'd be kind of weird not to be able to, like, watch it all unfolding and to be in one venue, but
yeah,
be good for the state.
Yeah, all right. So on to predictions. Do I have to go first this time?
You know, we should probably, like, write it down.
I know.
I think you do, though, because I think I did last time.
I think you did, because we put Tom on the spot, and I think you went next. So,
mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I want to be optimistic about this game. I don't think we get run off the field the way Nebraska does, because, frankly, I think we're a little better coached. I also think that it would be unusual for Wisconsin to do that 2 weeks in a row. So, but I also have a tough time finding a win. I don't see them as, like, you know, the second coming of the 85 Bears. I just see them as just a better team that's actually grown and improved as the year's gone, you know, as the season has progressed. So I'm going to say Iowa beats Melvin Gordon 24-21. But unfortunately, the rest of Wisconsin manages another 10 points, either defensively or, you know, God forbid, Stavi actually does something. So I'm going to say, unfortunately, I have to pick Wisconsin 31, Iowa 24.
Yeah, I think that's a very rational pick. And if I was being
It's what the head says. It's not what the heart says.
Right. And if I was being rational, I'd probably go with that, too. Although there's one little element for me, and that is that it seems that what we usually get under a Ferentz coach team is at least one inexplicable loss of the season. I guess Iowa State's probably that one, although how we lost to Minnesota was pretty bad. But usually we get one unexpected good victory over a team we're not expected to. You remember, I think we beat a pretty good Michigan State team. Was that in 2012?
2012?
We actually,
it was like, yeah, one of our
which
only Big Ten wins.
And there was no reason at all for Iowa to win that game.
Didn't they go to the Rose Bowl that year, Tori?
Yeah, I think they did really well. No, they won conference championships in 11 and 13. So it wasn't a vintagely good Michigan State team, but it was way better than a 4-8 Iowa team. As I've mentioned, you know, Wisconsin's been the foil a couple times in these kind of games. 2004 in the Barry Alvarez final home game, in the Iowa clinching an unexpected Big Ten championship out of the blue game, and then the whatever year, 2008, no, whenever the Barry Alvarez last game was. So
as 05 or 06 maybe.
So I'm actually irrationally just saying that Iowa was just due for one of those games, and they haven't had it yet, and there's only two games left. So you know what? I am going to go with the upset special, and I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. So I'm going to say 34-31. I still have Wisconsin on 31, but Iowa miraculously finds some sort of offense. That's probably
you got to put yourself out there.
You know what? I'm going to amend that. With the defense that Wisconsin has, I'm going to amend the score, and I'm going to say that somehow, because it's a cold November game, both defenses play well. So I'm going to knock it down to 27-24, Iowa.
Okay. All right.
That, when I said the 31 number or 34 for Iowa, that just doesn't ring right.
Yeah. Well, against this defense, I want to believe that that's possible and likely, and you know, we got a lot riding on it, not just the, you know, the program direction, the bragging rights with our friends and neighbors and borders, but also, you know, a big golden calf, as well as, a case of bells is on it for you.
That is true.
Which I would be happy to get one of these too. I would be thrilled to pay up.
Yeah.
To be honest, but I felt confident about the bet then, and I still kind of feel like it's a solid bet now. And just think, if it hadn't been for Minnesota, you'd already be enjoying it, but you might have to a dream deferred thanks to the Gophers. Well, let's hope you're right. Let's hope I'm wrong. Let's hope that I'm on next week eating crow.
I don't think you'd have to. I mean, that honestly, that is really probably the most rational way to look at it. And you know, we shall see. You know, I do think Iowa has a puncher's chance, at least. I mean, I have kind of been a little bit bemused, I guess, by, you know, this notion that Wisconsin all of a sudden is like, you know, Alabama or some right. undefeatable giant, you know, which, you know, I don't think they are. I think they're better than Iowa this year? Yeah. But I don't think the gap is nearly as big as people are freaking out about, primarily because of, I mean, Nebraska just crapping themselves.
Yeah,
frankly.
Exactly. And I think, but I will admit that there is probably an edge that they have, and that they have, you know, they're better than they were when they lost to Northwestern, I believe.
You know, I could end up eating crow next week if Iowa does what they did against Minnesota. It just doesn't feel like that could happen again, and that might be another me being naive.
Well, you know,
see, I guess
we stare into the abyss. You know, let's just say that we're not ready to mentally accept the possibility that something like that could happen twice in the same year. At least I'm not. So, nope. Well, you know, let's hold on to that. Let's hope that we have a good. I know we'll have a good time. It's one of the last games, and let's hope
it will be my last game actually, because. I'm not going to be able to make the Nebraska game.
Oh, that's right. So we'll have to work something out, and then we'll have to work out a way to Skype in, too, for the last show, for the 13th Saturday.
For sure.
All right. Well, on that note, let's bring it in for a landing on Iowa.
Go Hawks.